All right, can't stop the discourse.
Oh, I gotta stop the discourse?
You gotta stop the discourse. You gotta stop the discourse.
You didn't tell me I was gonna have to hit the stop button.
Welcome to the Rampant Discourse Podcast. It's March 7th, Saturday. I'm your host, Paul Essen. This is All in the Wrong Order. I'm joined by my regular political chief correspondent, Riley Andrew, and two guest correspondents this time around, Travis Hudson, regular Rampant Discourse correspondent, and Gerky. And we're going to be talking a little bit about Super Tuesday and what's going on with the Democratic race. A lot has happened since the last time we spoke, Andrew.
It's the last time it has happened since the last time you and I spoke. I did have that one debate recap with Bryn, and that was a lot of fun for me, hopefully fun for you to listen to. But it's been even crazier since then, because Super Tuesday was basically Super Fallout.
I mean, yeah, even since you and Bryn talked, there's been a huge amount of consolidation in the race. The Democratic Party basically got Klobuchar and Buttigieg in the room and said, listen, if you guys don't drop out now, we're going to be screwed with Bernie Sanders. And so be good little foot soldiers, drop out, support and coalesce around Biden, and voila, Super Tuesday happened.
You know I'm not on the Twitters, but a tweet that I did happen to see going around was saying, what did Tom Perez offer to Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg to get them to drop out, and why didn't Elizabeth Warren take it?
I think he wanted Warren to stay in.
Maybe that was the thing.
I don't think he offered Warren a damn thing.
Right. But to clarify, to speak to where we are right now, we have just had Super Tuesday, which Joe Biden won fairly strongly. It wasn't as convincing as it could have been. Bernie Sanders still had a very good night. But it wasn't the win that a lot of people had expected Bernie to have going into Super Tuesday, because Joe Biden did bounce back from South Carolina very strongly. And part of that was because right before Super Tuesday, after South Carolina, Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg dropped out. And after Super Tuesday, Elizabeth Warren has also dropped out, which means that our field of Democratic nominees is much reduced. We still have Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders in the lead, Bernie Warren.
Two 75-plus-year-old white guys.
Yep.
And it should be noted, perpetual losers, too. They had run for president in the past and lost.
Well, Bernie's run once, and Biden's run twice, so it's not like they've each had a lot.
Perpetual.
But
they've lost more times than I have.
Wait, this is not
Bernie's
Al Smith
only run once?
For president, yes.
Previously.
Really? Bernie has run for office a lot and lost a lot, but his electoral history is much more narrow. He's run for lower offices and lost those along the way.
Can I jump in, since we're here to offer the
layman's
perspective?
I should have put you in earlier.
Two quick questions. Is one, maybe it was just you used the wrong phrase. You said bounced back from South Carolina. Wasn't that where Biden was like strongest, I thought?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Biden had a very strong showing in South Carolina. He called it his firewall. It was his firewall plus. Oh. And as a result, he pushed that into even more success. So bouncing back is not really the best.
He springboarded from it.
He springboarded, perfectly.
Okay, that's better. Okay, and then who's Tom Perez?
Tom Perez is the Democratic National Committee chairman. So he's the guy in charge of the political operations of the party until they have a candidate, basically.
Okay.
So the weird thing is, the DNC can sometimes put their thumb on the scale. They should. You would think that the Democratic Party would just unbiasedly let the voters choose who to nominate. But in truth, they have preferences, and they oftentimes put their thumb on the scale.
So does this person, right now it's Tom Perez, do they have a role outside of election season?
Yes, they mostly are fundraisers.
Okay.
Fundraisers and organizers.
It sounds like they're kind of like almost... Probably you're going to come up with a better term. They're like a de facto leader of the party right now at this point. Like, obviously they're not a candidate.
I would say the de jure. I don't know if I know my English well enough, but I think they're de jure the leader of the party.
That's not English for one.
What, de jure?
That's Latin.
Well, that's great. Sorry. I'm looking at the English major, and that's why.
Like he said, it's Latin.
I know, but it's used in English, right?
Yes.
He just said de facto. I can say de jure.
Absolutely.
You both speak Latin.
Those things are completely understood in English.
Yeah. So I think you would say he's the in Latin. You would say he's the de jure leader. But someone like, well, Donald Trump would be the de facto leader of the Republican Party, and whoever the
chair of the RNC is right now, who I don't know who that is.
Yeah.
Okay.
He doesn't matter too much right now.
Yeah. So you brought up a good point, Travis. Before Andrew and I go too deep in a rabbit hole, the reason why I wanted to bring you two on is because let me give a brief history of my political prognostications. In 2016, I said very confidently that Hillary Clinton would not win the nomination and Donald Trump would not win the nomination. And then once they both respectively won the nomination, I said, well, at least there's no way Donald Trump would become president. And we all know what happened. For this election, I have many podcasts where I'm on record as saying, like, oh, Kamala Harris, so great. Cory Booker, so great. And they flamed out really fast. And just like a week or two ago, I'm like, I was feeling all good about myself because I've been so consistent that Joe Biden, there's no way the Democratic Party would nominate this goofus who's clearly going senile, is a gaffe machine, and has like this long track record of questionable legislative accomplishments. And yet, look what's shaping up. Joe Biden is probably about to become the nominee for the Democratic Party. So I have proven without a shadow of a doubt, I know nothing. And I cannot be counted on to predict anything. And I have a theory that it's because I am completely out of touch with the average voter. I don't think most voters care about politics all that much. I don't think they follow politics all that much. And therefore, it's hard to predict what they're going to do.
So, and I know Andrew has an article coming out about his reasons for, I guess, I don't know if it's saying disliking Biden or not preferring him. I don't know which phrase you would apply to it.
It's a complicated piece.
But, so what would Paul's opinion be on why you think, because, like, the narrative I've read is that basically, like, Biden got the African-American vote.
Yes. Andrew's right.
But
I was wrong.
So, is he necessarily more popular? This is where I don't know the history of it. Is he historically more popular with them? Or is he still riding Barack Obama's coattails?
Obama. It's all about Obama.
Like that, that's pretty much what it is. Though,
that
okay?
is a huge yeah. part of it. He does have ties to the African-American community that goes way back in his own state. I'm going to get this wrong. It's Delaware, New Jersey?
Delaware.
He does have ties there. He's been involved in the community. It was some of his hallmark cases. When he was a lawyer, he was doing a lot of work helping. One of his great lines in the first debate or second debate coming back against Kamala Harris was, "You're a prosecutor. I was out there defending these people." Mm-hmm. And so he was able to help the community through that. He was also a player in the civil rights age, not as big of a role as he actually claims to have had. But he has that history, and he's always been a Democrat, unlike Bernie Sanders, who's the Democratic Socialist. So he has the chops for the role that the more conservative African-American Democrats are looking for. And the fact that he also was Obama's vice president is meaningful. I heard one African-American commentator talk about it as, you don't see a white man, especially one who's used to and accustomed to being in power, willing to play second fiddle to a black man for 8 years. That means a lot.
I just want to point out one thing that you touched upon but kind of breezed past is I believe there's a lot of evidence to show that that black Democratic voters are in general a lot more conservative than the average Democratic voter.
Yes.
And Joe Biden is probably one of the more conservative candidates out there. I mean, it's kind of hard to say because he's still pretty far left. But when you have like
Bernie
a self-avowed socialist and Elizabeth Warren, and even a lot of the other younger candidates who may have been black themselves, there was a lot of like kind of they were still kind of out there on the progressive wing, kind of with some quote unquote woke policies and whatnot that may not have gone over as well. And Joe Biden is kind of the crusty old white guy who's kind of still got some conservative values in terms of the Democratic Party.
Were there other candidates trying to go further that way because they thought, well, Trump went so far the other way, I can win by going exactly the opposite? And it turned out, no, people want more of the
I think it has to do
middle.
With Bernie, actually. Bernie has been so popular with his completely way out left policies that, in general, the field has gotten a lot for more left because they're like, oh, well, he's so popular with these policies. Let's trade on that. Let's take some of those, you know, but temper them some.
I think there's a lot to that because some of the things that Bernie Sanders has been saying and other candidates have been saying in addition were completely anathema like 1, 2, 3 elections ago. Like Bernie Sanders was the crank that like no one would really
okay, sure, he's a senator from Vermont, but that's as far as it's going to go. And now you have a lot of the candidates taking up the mantle of, like, let's abolish private insurance and Medicare for all and free Green New Deal and free everything. Like, a surprisingly large number of the candidates picked up that. Okay. And it's probably to credit to Bernie Sanders, like Gerke said.
Although, to your point, he's popular, but he hasn't won. So why do they think riding the similar platform, do they think they can do it better then? Like, why would you emulate Bernie Sanders when he's already the name that you're then, you have to, you know what I mean? You kind of have to overcome that hurdle just to get past him.
I don't know.
The reasoning could be, for example, for Elizabeth Warren, she agrees with him on a lot of policy issues, but doesn't think he's necessarily well-suited for the role of being a president. He's not very presidential. He's out there angry and shouting and talking about revolution. Whereas she can talk about the same policy issues, but do so in a more refined way. Talk about a plan that she has for everything. And be professorial, presidential. And that is a very appealing thing. And now, it ended up not working out for her, for maybe that is still too far left. But Bernie Sanders has a lot of the credit for moving that conversation to where it is now. And it's not that he hasn't won. He has a lot of history of winning, especially after having first lost. He'll lose a couple of elections and then eventually win. He gets his message across through a series of these things and then moves up the chain. He's had a very successful political career doing that, but it's almost always been at the expense of Democrats. He's beaten Democrats to get into pretty much every position he's had.
And I think there's... Sorry. One thing that was interesting, and I think that was working for Warren, she was leading Bernie for a stretch of time when she was presenting herself as, like, I'm the more presidential, maybe, like, I'm the candidate with all the plan for everything. I've got plans for paying for all this. Bernie doesn't. And Matt Welch, who's a journalist that I follow on Twitter, he had a really interesting theory, and he has poll numbers that support this. The moment that it was leaked from her campaign that there was that conversation years ago between Bernie and Warren where she claims that Bernie said a woman can't win the presidency, ever since that point, she's been steadily going down in the polls, and he was steadily going up. And the theory is that that kind of identity politics kind of... before that, Warren was not trying to really play up the woman card at all. She was just, you know, here's my ideas, I'm the smartest one, I've got, like, all these plans. But after that, it was kind of perceived as she was trying to play up, like, oh, I'm the woman, and you should vote for me for that. And it looks like voters weren't buying it. I don't know if that's true or not, but there's definitely poll numbers to kind of support that as a turning point.
That was a turning point in terms of the polling numbers. I don't think it's necessarily 100% fair to blame Elizabeth for it, because, one, if it happened at all like that, it was her her campaign doing it, not her. Although they did it maybe at her direction, or maybe with her knowledge, or maybe they did it without. That's hard to know. But regardless, that was the point when she started to really suffer in the polls, and because they're both driving in the same lane as far as those kinds of policies go, and they share a lot of voters. Now, there's an awful lot of them who would vote, I'm only ever going to vote for Bernie, or I'm only ever going to vote for Elizabeth, I won't change over to one or the other. So it's even inside that lane, there's not as much crossover as you might expect. A lot of people who I've heard saying they supported Elizabeth Warren liked Pete Buttigieg as their number two. And for Bernie Sanders, the people who like Bernie Sanders, many of them don't have a number two. Their number two may well be Donald Trump.
Or the Socialist Party of America candidate.
Yeah, so I think going back to... I just blanked out what I was going to say. I forgot.
Well, I was talking about Warren and the woman card.
Well, there was a couple things I wanted to say. One of them...
Sorry.
Like, everyone...
All the men here were cutting you off.
No. Everyone that I know on Facebook who... stated who they voted for, right? He's like, oh, I'm so happy that today I got to go vote on Super Tuesday. They all voted for Warren. I didn't see a single person say, oh, yeah, I'm so glad I've got to vote for Bernie on Facebook.
I think I got one Sanders, right?
No? Someone, and when I was asking kind of like how to figure out who to vote for, people would said they were going to support Sanders.
Do you think that speaks more towards your friends, social media, or something else?
Probably my friends, I assume.
I was going to say that's like your echo chamber type of thing, like you're only friends with people that are similar to you, maybe?
But, no, I'm not, actually, so to clarify, of the people that I'm friends with, I think a lot of them did vote for Sanders, and it's possible some voted for Biden, too, but the only ones who... like broadcast who they voted for.
The other people kept it
for
secret.
Warren. Exactly.
They voted for Sanders, but didn't want to, for some reason, tell everybody they voted for Sanders.
Yeah.
And we talked about this. I had a theory that at that point, because this was during on election day, correct?
Yeah.
Or right
on
before?
On election day.
I had a theory that at that point, a lot of Warren supporters were considering jumping ship and voting for Bernie because it looked like it was. There's this thinking that you want to vote for a quote unquote winning candidate, and that Warren seemed like she might have been a sinking ship, in which case you might as well have your vote count, and I'm using a lot of air quotes here, by voting for Bernie instead of voting for the Warren who's not going to have a chance. And I suspect that was intent by Warren voters to be like, no, look, she's got momentum. We're all going to vote for Warren. She's still winning.
Yeah.
Come on, you don't have to jump ship. That was my theory on that, and to try and like make it seem like she's got more support. And that was kind of her last stand right there on Super
mm-hmm.
Tuesday.
And then also like the DNC comments about Ted Perez not, did I get the name wrong?
Tom,
sorry.
It's fine.
Tom Perez not offering Warren anything, which would make sense if they're trying to split by Bernie's vote, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if Warren had dropped out, her supporters most likely would have supported Bernie.
I think the
especially
majority
since
of the
Buttigieg was
right.
out
right.
also.
Exactly.
By then.
Not a lot of them going to Tulsi Gabbard.
Who's still in the race, by the way.
Should be noted.
Fun question I heard asked of Elizabeth Warren by a reporter was,
oh,
so you're the last woman in the race and you're leaving. Well, how do you make this think this feels for women out there? And it hurts. It hurts that we have to wait 4 more years. Tulsi's still running!
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, she does have a chance. We understand this. But she is still running and no one pays any attention.
Somebody asked Andrew Yang, like, what do you think the debate requirements, what do you think the requirements are going to be for the next debate? And his answer was, whatever Tulsi has plus one. And that's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they did. The requirements used to be all you needed was one delegate. She got one delegate in American Samoa. And they're like, you know what? For the next debate, you're going to need 2 delegates, which is just kind of bonkers. And I also saw that it's funny that the Democratic Party has decided that they've got a field of 3 people and they're going to make the requirements that the 2 old white guys are going to be on stage and the 1 woman of color is going to be left off. Just throw that out there, DNC. Not a good look.
Well, they're also not inviting Deval Patrick, and he's a man of color, but he doesn't.
Oh, is he still in too?
He's still running, but he doesn't have a delegate. So.
Oh, okay, there you go.
And again, since I don't know the inner workings of everything, I thought you guys have made reference to Tom Perez. You guys'
yes.
name right?
Let's just call him T. Perez.
Like, I don't know how much of a joke it was you said earlier that.
Oh, it's totally a joke.
What did he give? Like, there's nothing like.
There's nothing known, and it's not even really. It was a joke. There's probably some backdoor dealings going on. It's like, okay. Beto O'Rourke for his things that he's get to be the gun czar, and Buttigieg will be a cabinet member, and Amy Klobuchar will get to be some high level position.
And that's not. I mean, it's kind of speculation, but
it's totally speculation.
But Biden, like after Beto dropped out and endorsed
Beto,
in English,
Roberto.
Right? Yeah. Sorry, Beto. How would you want me to say it? Beto O'Rourke. After he dropped out and endorsed. But are you legitimately asking me?
I was legitimately asking.
It wasn't my weird pronunciation.
No.
Okay. Because I was trying to be Beto.
No.
He was a candidate.
Okay. He was one of the...
I think he was the other candidate.
Yeah.
One of the 20-plus. He dropped out fairly early on after some impressively aggressive claims about going out there and taking people's AR-15s away from them.
Or not even that. Just like all the guns.
Well, yeah. But he's especially going after those. So good luck taking away somebody's AR-15.
Yeah,
because they'll shoot you.
Well, I love it.
Yeah, someone who has an AR-15 probably is not going to feel... Well, anyway, he endorsed Biden, and then Biden had him up on stage, and he said something along the lines of, like, hey, I'm going to need your help to, like, you know, go after those gun people or whatever. I don't know exactly what he said. But it's kind of a... I think there probably are backdoor dealings where he's like, listen, Buttigieg, you've got a bright future in this party. You're young. You don't have a chance this time around. Be a good foot soldier, drop out, and maybe a little bit more funding will come your way if you want to make a gubernatorial run or a senatorial run or something in the future. Or maybe there's going to be a nice little plum cabinet position in the Biden presidency.
So like they're saying, like, if you step aside so that we can win, then we'll give you a position somewhere. And so that's kind of what the chair is doing there.
And it doesn't even necessarily have to be explicit. Like, even the voters, I think, would realize that. You see people online all the time who are like, well, I won't, you know, I hate this person because they're going to cause us to lose to Trump, and then I'm never going to vote for them again. So I think some people play that kind of political calculus in their head, and they would, next time around, they'll appreciate, oh, you know what, Buttigieg, he dropped out, and he saved us from, you know, nominating Bernie, or whatever kind of calculus goes on in their head.
So another question I would have would be, I thought last, in 2016, wasn't everything else set aside about people voting, like, against Hillary instead of for Trump, but one of the things was, like, people said they didn't want more of the same, right? Wasn't that one of the complaints levied at? It's like, we don't want more Clintons, and they thought she was just going to be a continuation of Barack. So like, is that swung back around that, like, I mean, Biden's going to be just the same continuation, isn't he?
He absolutely is. He is the establishment candidate. Yeah. Right. So if you want status quo, you're going with Joe.
So aren't they worried that the same thing will, I mean, like I said, there's a whole bunch of
his campaign slogan. If you want the status quo, go with Joe.
Actually, his campaign slogan is like restoring the soul of America or something.
So basically,
like that.
Yes.
So it's like, I'm going to go back to like the pre-Trump era, and that's his entire and. Every answer is like, when Barack Obama nominated me as his vice president, so
things weren't so bad.
Yeah.
Look at us now.
So, sorry.
Oh, no, but are they, I know there was a bunch of other issues tied up with Hillary against Trump, but is there a worry from the Democratic side that they're nominating a status quo again that's going to work against them?
I can't speak for the Democratic side, but I have been on this point for a while myself as a non-Democrat. I think that Democrats who are looking at Joe Biden as the most electable are missing the tone of where we are in this country right now. Donald Trump won because of nationalism, because of populism, because he represented something that was a change that people were asking for, because they're not happy with where things are and were, and they're still not happy. And that doesn't necessarily bode well for him as an incumbent, but he's also been pushing to make some of those changes happen and has been resisted somewhat successfully at times. So when you put somebody up against him who is status quo, then anyone who was going to be, well, I wanted to vote for somebody else, but I guess I'll continue to vote for Trump because at least he's the candidate of change here, the changes that I'm trying to see. Or if you've got somebody who's very angry and upset and wanted to vote for someone like a Bernie Sanders because they promised to bring about fundamental change to the system, and Joe versus Trump, which one's actually going to bring about fundamental change to the system? Well, Donald Trump is. It may not be the change that you are expecting or want, but sometimes any change is better than nothing if you're on the bottom of the heap.
I think the problem is that there's not a broad agreement on what led to Trump being elected.
It's very
especially among Democrats. You know, you talk to
it's Russia. It's clear that's what
no,
the answer
exactly.
Is.
You talk to some of them, but like, they said Hillary would have won if it weren't for Russian interference, or Hillary would have won if it weren't for Bernie, or Hillary would have won if she just visited Wisconsin, or Hillary did win because she won the popular vote, and mm-hmm. it's just a random fluke that she lost the Electoral College, or Hillary would have won if it weren't for James Comey and bringing up the emails at the last minute, or. I had a whole bunch more, but basically there's all sorts of different theories. And I do think that Andrew, as much as I disagree with the fact that Bernie might have the best shot at unseating Trump, I think he's got a point that I think the Democrats have been misreading the room, if you will. At least, and it's kind of hard to lump all Democrats into one big group, but the ones that I see quoted in news articles or online, and I know Twitter and Facebook is not the real world, but there seems to be this thought that, like, we can defeat Trump if we just nominate someone sane or whatever. And maybe not. A lot of the behavior of the Democrats, like the AOC types, who are just as shrill and off-putting to certain people as Trump is to other people, is, I don't know. Yeah, I kind of went off rambling there. Sorry.
So one thing I wanted to mention earlier when we talked about Biden as, you know, having the African-American vote is, you know, why hasn't Obama made any sort of endorsement for him? And is his lack of endorsement kind of a negative for Biden?
It can be, absolutely.
I mean, should it be perceived as a tacit, hey, I don't really want this guy, you know?
I think the biggest reason for Obama not to endorse Joe Biden right now is that Deval Patrick is still in, and he likes Deval Patrick quite a lot. Now, Deval Patrick has no chance of winning. As soon as Deval Patrick drops out, I think you will see Obama endorse Biden. But Obama did not endorse Biden earlier because Biden was showing a lot of weaknesses. And you do not, especially when you're someone as influential and powerful as President Obama is and was, want to endorse a candidate who then loses. Because it completely destroys your own sense of, well, I can actually do things. And not just your own for yourself, but what other people think of it. So your endorsement now means a lot less in the future. So he's waiting, as did everyone else. I mean, Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg endorsed Joe Biden, but they did it after they dropped out immediately. But then everyone else right along the same, it was this huge waterfall, cascade of endorsements for Joe that came out all at the same time, because it was like, okay, this is the turning point. The South Carolina firewall was real. It was bigger than we even expected it could be. The candidates are dropping out and endorsing him. This is the time. This is the time we all come around, and we're all throwing our hats to the same person so that none of us looks weaker.
You know, you mentioned the South Carolina firewall a couple times, and I, on a whim, I took a look at the states that have already held their primary or caucus and the states that have yet to. A lot of the southern states already have.
Yeah. That's where Biden, Joe has done so well.
That's where Biden has made his hay, to your point. A lot of the non-southern states, it's more of a mixed bag. And honestly, Bernie looks like he does better than Biden in those states.
That's one of the reasons why Bernie did so well in the 2016 primary season, is that even though he didn't do very well earlier on, these late states, he was close enough along the way. He picked up enough delegates that he stayed in the race. And then he got more overall in the long run. So even though everyone's feeling very down about Bernie Sanders right now, everyone was feeling really, really down about Joe Biden just 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks is a long time in a political campaign season like this. And we are not anywhere near the nomination phase.
Yeah, I don't think this is over yet. My two cents.
I have slightly still on topic, but more of a historical question. When we brought up Obama, what happened? Do presidents ever go on to hold another political office? It seems like they just kind of disappear off into the ether.
Some have. Grover Cleveland, right? Well, beyond the fact that he became president again. But he was like, he went back to the Congress, I believe.
He was in Congress for a while. And I think there's at least one case where the president went on to become a Supreme Court justice.
Yeah. But there's not like a rule that says they can't go back and be a member of the Senate.
No, they absolutely can. Yes.
They just choose not to, or...
It's after you've had that kind of position. Yes, it's a big step down.
Well, yeah, I know it's a, yeah. So, like,
after
to your point
CEO,
about
why would you want to make a salesperson?
Right, like to your point, like Obama didn't want to back, or no president would want to back somebody who then loses. I guess it's sort of like you don't want to go run for Senate and be like lose, because then it's going to be a blow to. But I guess I'm wondering, it's a blow to your political cachet. But if you're not going to hold political office, why do you care besides ego or something like that?
Because it's not just about the office. Obviously, the office of the presidency is very powerful. But the non-office of former president is also very, very powerful. They have Secret Service detail. They have influence. They get. If he wants to go have a commencement speech anywhere, any college in the world will say, yeah, come on board.
But essentially, like,
we'll give you $1 million.
You kind of, like, you get up, you be president, and then you essentially retire, I guess, at that point,
yeah.
Right? Like, don't they get, like, a lifetime salary,
yep,
or something like that? Yeah,
yeah.
So, like, they don't have to?
Yeah.
A lot of them stay... Well, I guess it varies. Some of them stay pretty active, though. I mean, Michelle and Barack Obama have like a deal with Netflix to produce a series of documentaries or something along the lines.
Right. They all still stay active in public life. I know that, but like they're,
yeah.
You guys had to go all the way back to like Grover Cleveland to find an example of somebody actually going back and holding an office, right?
It's definitely uncommon, and I think it's just because why would you?
Right.
Like everyone said, it's a step down. It's got to be a disappointment after being president to be so frustrated with becoming just like one out of 500 plus Congress people.
There's also some risks that, you know, say Joe Biden becomes the president and Barack Obama is now a senator from Illinois again, that if he and Biden disagree on something, that people will respect Obama's opinion more than Biden's, and you actually harm your own party's president by having a disagreement with them. So it prevents that kind of thing. It's kind of, you know, I've used this Catholic example before, but you have Pope Emeritus Benedict and Pope current Francis. If Pope Emeritus Benedict comes and says, well, Francis is wrong about this, it looks really bad for Francis. It also looks really bad for the whole institution. So Benedict has been very careful to be absolutely quiet and remain out of the spotlight.
Which one's sitting on the throne at the time? Isn't that the tiebreaker?
Well, yeah, that's clearly the important part is ex cathedra, who's sitting on the seat, and that's Francis 100% of the time.
Yeah.
But when you have people who have different opinions, as you always do, it gets a little complicated. So you avoid that kind of complication by not putting yourself in that situation.
I didn't realize the Pope could step down.
Well, Benedict
did. It doesn't happen very
okay.
often. It was kind of controversial, as I understand.
It was controversial. It has happened before, but
I don't mean to divert us onto something else.
The interesting thing is, you know, Pope Francis is currently quite ill, and they are sure it's not
Pope
coronavirus.
Francis?
Pope Francis is quite ill. He's been out of the public eye for a little while. He's had a cold for about a week, maybe a week and a half. And he's in Italy. They've tested him for coronavirus, and it is not coronavirus per the test.
Yeah.
Per the test. He does not have coronavirus. But He also is missing a portion of one of his lungs, so it doesn't really matter if it's coronavirus or not. He could very easily die from a disease like this. And if Pope Francis dies...
Pope Benedict become the new Pope.
And Pope Benedict is still alive, well, it just makes things a mess.
Yeah.
We don't want that to happen.
So you bring up the virus. I've seen the headlines, but I never read any of them. But people are complaining about Trump's reaction.
Yeah, it's politics. Well,
but like...
which is so what we're talking about.
Here's my question. Is like, since I didn't click on him or anything, like what has been his reaction? Just...
Essentially,
nothing. Or
it's something. Exactly what you would have expected his reaction to be.
He's
the greatest. We're doing great. Everyone's great. It's fine. Like,
I'm going to put my best man on it. Pence is now in charge of it. He's got all these doctors helping him out. They're great, and these are good doctors. And wash your hands.
Let's just use a flu vaccine. Oh wait, the CDC says it can't do that. Nah, they're wrong. Stuff like that.
And I have a hunch that the death rate is substantially less than 1%.
Yeah.
Even though the best evidence is that the death rate is something like 2.5%.
A bunch of tossing out random hunches from his gut.
But there's also, a lot of lack of information about this. So, he shouldn't be speaking about his hunches and his gut. But the fact is that we just don't have good information on a lot of these things. So that makes his hunch guesses even worse from that perspective. But they could be right. It could be less than 1%. We just don't know. It's probably not. If it is less than 1%, it means that we have a huge number of undiagnosed cases. But since we're not testing as much as we ought to, we don't know.
Or people aren't reporting it. Because like, if you get a cough and it goes away, then you might have had it.
You didn't even know it.
Yeah.
The problem is that if we have enough evidence to know that if there's anything that Donald Trump cares about, it's the performance of the stock market. Because he somehow ties the performance of the stock market to how he feels he's doing as president. The stock market has been doing really badly the past week or two.
2 weeks of really bad.
Mostly because people believe mostly because of coronavirus. And so I think in Trump's brain, he's thinking, if I can convince everyone that coronavirus isn't the problem, the stock market will go back up and everyone will love me. But as long as people are worried about coronavirus, the stock market's going to go down and people will love me slightly less. So
he's not saying, he's not coming up with, or I guess just wait until later in the year and he'll come up with a theory that like it was invented to hurt his chances at getting reelected or something.
I would not at all be surprised
if it's still around by July or something.
That is the craziest thing I've heard. Yeah. So that's scary.
Wouldn't shock me if he tweeted out like Chuck Schumer should not have unleashed coronavirus on us, because that's the type of thing that he does. I'm kind of curious, maybe go around the table, and maybe Andrew and I will sit at this one out, but who do you guys...
It's going to be a short table. There's only two other people sitting here, but okay.
Who do you two think is going to win the Democratic nomination, and should they? And do you think they have a good chance of beating Trump? Basically, talk on that, because that's where I've gotten things embarrassingly wrong.
So he's encouraging you to have a chance to be embarrassingly wrong.
Seriously, Paul?
No. And so I mean, the floor. You cannot do worse than me.
What I've read and talked with you guys and everything, to me it would be Biden, because he's the name.
You think he will win the nomination?
I think he'll win the nomination.
Yes.
Will he beat Trump?
Do you think he has the best chance to beat Trump? Remember, your guess is as good as mine. I'm not saying that to like try and downplay your guess or anything like that. I'm just saying I've been way off, so I'm interested in hearing.
So you're saying your guess is better than his?
your guess is actually better than mine, I think. And I'm being honest with
you. My totally naive, semi-informed opinion would be, I think he'd have a better chance than Bernie, I guess. Because I think, it seems like the people, they're going to be the people that vote for Trump anyway.
Right.
Not only Trump, but like there are people that will vote for Republican over Democrat no matter what. Mm-hmm. There are people that are going to vote for Trump no matter what. And if you throw somebody like Bernie up there, you might drive some of the more middle people over. Maybe they don't say Trump, but they're just like, the whole Hillary thing, like, I just don't want Bernie.
They stay home.
And they're gonna go, or they stay home, yeah, or something like that. And
every Biden, election is determined by who stays home.
I mean, Biden has somewhat of a little bit of the inroad. He has maybe the African-American, he has the Obama. He's been vice president, which somewhat has to count for something, right? Like, I mean, you were number two.
You would think so, but Donald Trump's qualification was a reality TV show host.
Well, so. Right.
Okay, sorry.
But I mean, like, from a more politically sane perspective, being vice president should make you more qualified for the job than...
Assuming that's what Americans want.
Right, yeah. So then there's the complication of, do you want more of the same or not?
Mm-hmm.
You threw out all the reasons that people might not have voted for Hillary last time, or... And it's even bad that I have to still phrase it like that, right? They vote for Hillary versus they were voting for the other guy. Like, that's how politics has become phrased now.
I don't think that that's necessarily inaccurate in politics in general, especially in the system that we have. When you have two parties that are, you know, big, broad parties that have coalitions, you end up with candidates that most people, generally speaking, don't like. Almost every election, especially at the top levels, is between two people that the average voter doesn't particularly enjoy, but likes one better than the other.
Well, I forget which one you brought up, I don't know, on a podcast or in an article, but the fact that you have to get through your own primary naturally means you have to, like, become a little bit more extreme, I thought, when it made that point. So by the time you get to the presidential election, you kind of have both extremes, because mm-hmm. the middle people can't even survive their own primaries.
And ironically, that didn't really happen this time around. I mean,
generally, right. Biden and kind of swung back the other way from Warren and Bernie, even though they weren't winning last time either, but
mm-hmm.
kind of swung. But again, like, from my understanding, that's kind of what Hillary was. She was not the... Well, she was the status quo. Maybe she wasn't the middle of the road.
She was also an overwhelming favorite from the beginning.
Yeah. And she is pretty middle of the road as far as a lot of those things go. She was not pushing a lot of very progressive positions. She was a Democrat and more progressive than Republicans, certainly, and more progressive than some Democrats. But
I would argue she's actually more radically conservative in some things than radically progressive.
Yeah, I mean,
in terms of being very hawkish militarily.
Especially if you look back at where Hillary Clinton is across her entire political career. She's another one, like Elizabeth Warren, who was at one point in her own life a Republican. She was a big Barry Goldwater fan.
Which is weird to think of.
It is incredible to think about that.
So how about you, Gerke?
I don't really know, but I did. Instead of sharing my opinion, I just thought I'd share one of the posts that went to my Facebook. Well, a friend of mine posted on my wall saying, "And if you're still undecided completely, let me share some insider knowledge. We will not win with a Biden, a Bloomberg, or a Klobuchar. People in this country are fed up with the status quo. That's why we couldn't win with Hillary. That's why people voted for Trump. And that's why we'll lose with the centrist. The party line voters will vote blue no matter who." That's a hashtag. Mm-hmm. So we need a nominee who can bring out the non-voters, who will only vote if we give them something to vote for. 50% of registered voters don't vote. Sanders and Warren are the only candidates offering policies that will actually help the working class and middle class Americans, and the only candidates speaking to a broad coalition of people from different backgrounds. Latinx, people of color, young people and immigrant groups, the poor and indebted, and other disenfranchised people who don't vote reliably. I thought it was interesting. My response was, you say insider knowledge. you lost me right there.
Insider trading is illegal.
I'm like, you lost me right there. How can you know? And then I also was kind of like, well, Hillary won the popular vote. I mean, people did go out to vote for her.
Well,
you know,
that's also a catch-22, right? If you're trying to capture the disenfranchised vote and the people that don't traditionally vote,
mm-hmm.
you got to be good enough to actually get them to go vote for you. Otherwise, there is
right.
no point.
Well, so, like, I think that's she's arguing that, you know, Bernie has the best chance to win against Trump because by getting the disenfranchised vote to come out and vote for him, plus all the kind of party line voters, she thinks the party line mm-hmm. voters will show up regardless.
Andrew, that sounds a lot like your argument for Bernie Sanders.
It's very similar. I will throw a little caution on that one now, though. We can look at polls state over state. So 2016 South Carolina to 2020 South Carolina. Bernie Sanders did less well in South Carolina in 2020 than he did in 2016. Okay, it was a big field. Look at Super Tuesday. The states that voted on Super Tuesday, even the states that he won, he tended to do less well in 2020 than it did in 2016.
Yeah, but Warren was still in even on Super Tuesday.
Fair. It's not apples to apples, but he hasn't had as much success in driving out new voters and disenfranchised voters as he's claiming to be able to do. So if you are banking on that, and that's been my argument all along, I think it needs an element of caution to say, we want this to be, we understand that this is a feeling that a lot of people have, mm-hmm. but if they're not acting on that feeling, then maybe it's not as meaningful.
Yeah, and I mean, my other thing is, you know, like, kind of the undecided voters, the voters who aren't, you know, I'm not a Republican, I'm not a Democrat, I'm undecided. I vote based on my wins each election, right? I think someone like Bernie might ostracize them, right?
Correct me if I'm wrong, did Hillary Clinton got less votes than Barack Obama did? in the previous election?
She most notably, she lost a large chunk, unsurprisingly, of the African-American population. They did not vote for her nearly as strong as they voted for Obama. She also lost non-college-educated whites. Barack Obama carried them pretty well. She lost them.
She lost them, but did they vote the other side, or did they just didn't vote?
Non-college-educated whites went for Trump. African-Americans stayed home.
Yeah, just didn't vote.
Okay. Well, Trump also got less votes than Romney the previous election.
He got roughly the same number of votes, but he had a higher turnout of Hispanics, go figure, and of African-Americans than Romney did.
Well, yeah, it's complicated. Trump employs a lot of, you know, illegal immigrants in his hotels.
That's exactly what they
don't get to vote, though.
but they have family who does.
What?
They do in Democratic states. But not for president. No, seriously, illegal immigrants can vote in many states, just not at the federal level.
So, we've talked about this about Andrew's most... No, you're just waiting for Facebook to automatically delete your account at this point, right? Yeah. I think you said before that, I only check in to Facebook like once a week at most, and I did yesterday, and I saw a couple posts. I was like, "Yep, this is why I stopped looking at Facebook, because there was like somebody had shared something that said like, "Boy, I sure hope they have ICE agents at the voting polls to deport all the illegal immigrants illegally voting." And I'm like, "It's only March, I guess. I don't want to see Facebook come November now or October or whatever. This is already starting now."
That says something about who's on your friends group.
It was literally one of my friends' moms.
It seems like you and Yerky need to mix friends a little bit.
Yeah, nobody like that's on my friends group. Yeah,
let's do a matchmaking service here. Any of your friends is single and you want to...
This is one of my friends' moms. So yeah.
Probably not single.
A little age difference, maybe.
Yeah. So one other thing I had read about that I thought they said might have attributed to Biden, I guess, beating Bernie was, I guess, I don't know if it was on Super Tuesday or leading up to it, but once they kind of both saw where the cards were laying, Bernie started doing like really strong attacks against Biden. But Biden took more of the high road of like, we're going to have change or do great or something. I don't know if that was... It was on
Make America Great Again?
No. It was on some CNN article, I think, or something. So I didn't know if that...
I don't know. I would say that the information that I've read on that is that he's looking to do more attack ads.
Who's he?
Now. Bernie Sanders. Okay. Bernie Sanders is looking to do more attack ads against Biden now after Super Tuesday than before. Whether he was doing some already, I don't know. But the reading I've seen is that he intends to increase that. So if it didn't work before, it won't.
I must say, so as a general political question, you two are more involved in it. What do you think works better, an attack ad against or actually the ideal would be you'd pump up your own positions, right? But obviously the standard is tear down your opponent.
Yeah. If you want to win by any means necessary, you send an attack ad. Because you win by both saying to their less committed supporters, don't bother voting for this person, stay home. You maybe convert someone to your side, but probably not. But you also demonstrate your willingness to go all out to your side, so you build up some enthusiasm. Hey, look at me, this is who I am, is useful only towards the beginning of a campaign when you don't have good name recognition. So Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden already have all the name recognition they need. There's going to be nothing but attack ads from here on out.
That's lovely. That's going to make for a really fun few months. When do they make the final nomination?
I think it's in July.
Yeah.
I guess, how does that work? Is it that... you know, one person's left standing when everyone else drops out? Or does the Democratic Party actually get to say, this is our nominee?
It depends on how things go in the primaries.
Okay.
So if Joe Biden goes on and has overwhelming success in the next couple of primaries and everyone else has dropped out and he has a commanding lead and he has a plurality or even a majority of the delegates, he is, at that point, the de facto nominee. And the convention just becomes a coronation ceremony.
So, yeah, how exactly does this... it's called the convention work. Like, I hear delegates and everything. So is it essentially like an electoral college, but within,
yes.
So you, you get a certain number of delegates for a state that you won the primary in or something
like
that?
And it's done, the Democratic primaries are done on proportional basis, but you have to reach at least 15% of the vote total in any state to win a delegate.
Within the state.
Within the state.
And each state has a set number of delegates?
And each state has a set number of delegates, and they decide how they're going to assign those delegates. So sometimes they can change things, sometimes they can't, but they assign those delegates to the people based on the turnout of the voters with the percentages. So if Joe Biden wins 53% of the vote and Bernie Sanders wins 35% of the vote and Elizabeth Warren wins 14% of the vote, Elizabeth Warren gets no delegates, and the 53 and 35 split up to the delegates to based on that proportion left. So Biden will get 60% of them.
Wait, is that standard across all states, or each state gets
that's standard across all those states?
Okay. That's so it's not like the Electoral College is like, if you win the state, you get all the...
Again, that's...
Except for Maine.
Yeah, the Electoral College is decided by the states. The states decide how they send the electors. You win the state says, here's who the electors are going to be and how they're going to vote. But they could choose proportionality.
Yeah, doesn't Nebraska or something split it? I thought one of them did something.
I know. I'm pretty sure Maine does. I don't know about Nebraska.
Okay.
Additionally, there are something like 30 states. No, it can't be that many. A strong plurality that have all signed off on a quasi-constitutional amendment where they're going to say, we will in concert elect proportionally so that the person who wins the proportional vote in our state wins the proportional selection so that you don't have situations like 2016 because they all do it at the same time. And
are you talking about the national election?
The national election. Okay. For that Electoral College. It's an interesting idea to try and circumvent the Electoral College while it still exists.
I was going
to
say that kind of destroys the intention of the Electoral College, right?
I'm okay with that.
By turning it into as close to a general election as you can get, right?
I'm pretty sure it's
going to be the stated
idea. Until your candidate wins the Electoral College and that's popular.
Well, have they adjusted the electoral votes?
It's based on congressional representation.
It is. So every census, when it gets redistricted, that's when it resets. So we'll have one after 2020?
The census isn't in 2020, so... Yeah. Yeah, so but they will reassign electoral college votes from one state to another based on population.
Well, more specifically, they'll reassign congressional representation, and electoral college will follow.
So how does that? Okay. Yeah, how does that work when we're getting off from the presidential stuff? But that doesn't matter. When you reassign representation, that means if your state lost enough population, you lose a representative, and another state gains one.
Yes, but so that means you don't have to lose population for that to happen. You just don't gain it as quickly.
Right. So if everybody else went up or something, so that means you have to redraw the map, though, right? At that point,
and you don't redraw the map because the map is the states. You have to redraw the map within the state. So,
right, that's what I mean. Within the state, yes, you used to have nine districts. Now you might only have eight. Somebody has to redraw the map, and I guess it has to be it has to be coincident with an election cycle. Then
it's coincident with the census results.
Okay, but so when you drop a district.
You could have two politicians two incumbents run for the same seat. There's only one seat now for the two.
Okay, that was going to be my question. Who gets the boot, or how do they choose who runs for those districts?
You have to be a resident of the district you're running for. So depending on who draws the lines, they can say, well, we're going to protect our guy, and we're going to make sure that this guy is running against a person from his own party. So they'd have to primary themselves. Mm-hmm. You have two incumbents in the primary, and one of them knocks them out in the primary and runs against the... And that is part of the gerrymandering problem. But the real problem with the gerrymandering situation is that they can draw the lines to make safer districts.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So this is where all the religious white people live, and we're going to draw a little weird crescent moon-shaped district. That doesn't make any sense. A quick fact check. You were right. There are only two states which proportionally assign their electoral thingies. And it's Nebraska and Maine. Electors. Electoral electors.
And that's at this point, but at this point, there are a number of states that have signed on to this pact to do it nationwide, but they have a trigger clause in there that they don't have to do it until they reach a majority that can control the election.
Can I guess that it's all the blue states?
It's a lot of blue states.
Why do they have to have a pact with other states? Can't they just do it within their state?
They could, absolutely, but doing it yourself if you're like Nebraska or Maine and start doing that,
you're just helping the other side.
You put your voters at a disadvantage theoretically. Mm-hmm. Because the whole reason why the Electoral College is upsetting people is that the person who wins the election doesn't win the election, right? And that could happen on a state level, and then the people are at the state level are much more responsive to the people in the state because.
And I guess the more purple a state you are, the more likely resistance there is within the state, right? Because then you're going to have more of an equal split versus.
In a lot of ways, the more purple you are, the more this would be beneficial. If you are going proportional and you are 90-10, instead of having 100% of the electors go to one party that you knew, you now have only 90%.
Right, but I guess. Yeah, but that means you still got 9 versus the other guy's 1 versus. Right now, if you win 51-49, you get all 10.
Right.
Versus now you only get 5-5, or however they do the rounding.
Let's take two examples. Let's say DC, which has 1. Do they have 3? I can't remember if DC has 1 or 3.
Not sure.
And California, they have a bunch. But DC and California are both strongly Democrat. DC votes for Democrats 90-10.
Right.
And so that's the strongest it goes. And say California is 60-40, which is still very, very strong. If California right now says, okay, all of our huge block of electors go Democrat, but we're going to sign on to this pact and say we're going to do it proportionally, now, let's say they have 50, that's wrong, but they have 50 electors. They only get 60% of that.
Well, that, and that's my point. Like that
helps out.
California is more purple than D.C., right?
More than D.C.,
yeah. Right.
But they still don't want to give 40% of their electors to the Republican.
Well, right, that's what I mean. That's what I thought. I would think, like, the closer you are to an even split, the less likely you would want to do proportional because, like you said, you're throwing more to the other side.
Except there's the risk of it going the other way, right? If you're a Democrat and you're close to 50-50 right. in your state and, you know, it goes 51 Republican and 49 Democrat, then whoever's on the losing side is going to like having this
right.
split. So it kind of, it's hedging your bets, right? And Andrew, you were right. It was 3 for DC on electoral college.
So.
One of your answers was right.
So
one of your two options.
I couldn't remember if they only had one Eleanor Holmes Norton and if they gave them the 2 senators, even though they don't have senators. You know, it's really weird how DC works into this thing. I don't like it.
And just because it's on the board game map that we've been playing, you said it way, way earlier.
American Samoa has electors for the Democratic primary.
Okay.
And they also vote for president. I don't know exactly how that works out. But
I was going to say, like, how does like that, and isn't Puerto Rico still a territory?
Yeah, they're a territory. They also vote for president.
I know. I saw the halftime show.
Pretty sure they did not vote for Trump.
But, like, do they all just get rolled in? Like, you never hear about their electoral, like, they're not up on the big map on election night. Are they, like, showing what their electoral votes are going towards, or do they just all roll together?
They don't all roll together. They have individual votes, and so they matter, but they are so small. It's
like
Wyoming.
They might have 3 also.
Wyoming's up on the big board, but only because it's in the middle of the contiguous U.S. and a big state.
It would be kind of conspicuous if it was just a hole there where Wyoming was, because they didn't want to show it.
Whereas American Samoa and Puerto Rico, you can have them off the map pretty easily.
Yeah. So, what do you think about the possibility of an independent or a third party run at president?
Go ahead. Throw your vote away.
When you first pass the post, that's basically what it is.
I mean, I like the idea of having kind of a ranked system of voting instead of...
Ranked choice vote.
Instead of just A or B.
So,
I mean, having 3 main parties would be nice, or more main parties, instead of it always just being... Republican or a Democrat. I say that as a Democrat, you know, I'm not saying it in self-interest.
So really. I was asking my wife the other night about this. I was like, because I believed it was, doesn't France or one of the other countries is like totally way the other way, right? They have like 20 political parties or
most
something like that.
Parliamentary systems, which France is parliamentary, UK is parliamentary, and they have a lot of parties.
Because so
the parliamentary system spawns parties more easily than the...
But then, like, system. So, I think it was, like, she brought it to, like, Great Britain or something like that. So I was like, oh, so the Prime Minister could win with, like, 25% of the vote or something
or
like
less,
that, just, or less. And, like, that seems almost worse than just having 2 parties.
That's why a lot of the European systems that you might hear, like, the government collapsing, it's not, like, literally the government is collapsing, but basically, mostly the... A lot of times the Prime Minister has to get together a coalition of parties.
Right.
So if let's say there's 10 parties and the prime minister was elected with 25% of the vote, you have your party behind you, presumably.
Yeah, and then you chunk at 25%.
And then
so
you're like, well, okay.
10s and 15s in there to help you out.
I'll reach out to the Greens. I'll reach out to the Socialists. I'll reach out to the Evangelicals, whatever kind of various parties there are,
well,
and hopefully get enough support from all of them to get 50 plus percent.
Do those systems also, I guess I also envision if you have 20 parties, that means you'd have 20 candidates for prime minister. It's probably not realistically like that.
Right? Well, in the parliamentary system, you're not voting for prime minister. Okay. That's even more removed than we get to vote theoretically for president, but we don't really vote for president.
It's
we
like
vote
Speaker of the House.
Right. Yeah, it's Speaker of the House. You don't vote for Speaker of the House. You vote for your congressman, okay. And then if your party wins Congress, then they elect
within
themselves.
Okay, that's what I was wondering, if that's how like something like that works, where you have way more parties.
Okay. But, I mean, one of the reasons I ask is because I feel like there's a strong sense from a lot of Democratic voters, at least, and I think it's safe to say that you two are lean that way. I'm pointing at Travis and Gerke. They seem to have an intense, searing hatred of the idea of anyone running as an independent, under the theory that that is basically throwing the election to Trump.
I'm about to say, the logic problem is, the logic there is they think the independent is going to steal nothing but Democratic votes, right?
That seems to be the thinking, that those votes belong to the Democrats, and that independents will just take them away from them.
But that's basically saying an independent is Democrat, like, basically a Democrat by another name, then, is what...
It depends on who the person running as the independent is. If Bill Weld loses, as he is going to, the Republican nomination, but runs for a strong presidency and all of a sudden is pulling 10% of the vote, you're going to hear very few complaints from those people.
I don't know about that. I think they're still going to be mad, because I think legitimately Bill Weld will probably pull more Democratic votes than Trump voters. If his performance in the primary is an indication, he is not appealing to Trump voters right now.
Well, I don't think he's appealing to much of anybody. It's purely hypothetical, but you're right. True. He will continue to pull Democratic voters because some of those Bernie voters, for example, if Biden wins, are going to say, well, I don't like Bernie. I don't like Biden. And I really still don't like Trump because he's Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go with this third option. That's why you end up with a huge vote for Ross Perot back then.
I'm about to say, the two main examples I can think of a third party guy running are Perot and it was Nader, right?
Yeah.
It was 2000.
Yeah.
It was 2000, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's because I could easily see, I mean, if it's Bernie and it's Trump, that seems to be two almost as polarizing candidates as Hillary and Trump back in the day for different reasons. Biden, maybe not as polarizing, but we still got two really old white guys who, I don't know.
It's going to be a very low turnout election, I would say.
Yeah, they're not exactly inflaming the passions for a lot of people. I mean, I guess Trump is, for good and for ill. But I'm not sure Biden is inflaming the passions for anybody, for good or ill.
And historically speaking, low turnout favors the Republicans.
Hmm. Well, that was going to be another historical question I had, would be, what is the track record of the incumbent in a presidential race?
Pretty high.
I know it's pretty high, because I'm pretty sure in our lifetime, the only one that didn't was H.W., right?
Yep.
George Everybody H.W. else has had two terms in our lifetime.
In our lifetime, yes.
Because Reagan, Clinton, W., and Obama, and Trump's TBD.
Yeah. So, yeah, the only time an incumbent has lost recently is George H.W. and Carter. And Carter had a terrible economy, had flubbed a lot of international relations stuff, and was, you know, a nice enough guy, but not particularly well-liked for his politics. And George W. H.W. Bush had been primaried and had broken campaign promises to his base. So he was extremely unpopular because of stuff like that.
And the history of incumbents winning when the economy is doing well is even higher, I think. I don't really have the numbers to back that up.
Which backs up your point about Trump trying to make sure
he wants that stop
the coronavirus reduce. Doesn't yeah. drag the economy down.
Yeah.
You guys want some stories from the election?
Do we? When I was looking through the posts, our old posts, I saw your article draft from like 2016 or something that never got published.
Yeah.
So let's share some on the air so they actually get shared.
So one of the things, one of the stories in the media about this election, this primary, was how the African-American vote would split with regards to Biden versus Bernie. That older conservative African-Americans would go towards Biden, and younger conservative voters in the African-American community would probably go to Biden, but that Bernie was pulling a lot of support from young African-Americans, that he has always had this strong youth appeal. So I wanted to give an anecdotal example of that going on in my precincts. I had an African-American family come into my precinct to vote, and as they were leaving, the mother was berating her 18-year-old, 19-year-old son and basically beating him on the head because he voted for Bernie.
Wow.
And she was livid with him. You still live in my house and you still have to do what I tell you.
This is why you don't share it on Facebook.
I didn't share my votes on Facebook.
That sounds like something that might happen with families that I know.
Yeah, so actually in a similar, well, maybe not that similar, my daughter was very adamant, Talia.
You hit her when she voted for Bernie.
She was very adamant about who she wanted to win the election, and she begged Paul, "Daddy, please, will you vote for Elizabeth Warren? Will you
Spoiler
please
alert, I did not.
Vote for Elizabeth Warren?" Still she did. Asked him like 20 times.
Wow.
So sweetly.
That is so
And she's like, "Please, Daddy, I really like her. So I really want you to vote for her."
And obviously you can't get totally in your daughter's head, but like realistically, what does she know about Elizabeth Warren that she would say, "I really like her"?
So she watched a couple of the debates. Well, not a couple. She watched parts of a couple of the debates with me. And
did you make her, or did she want to?
She wanted to.
Okay, no, I asked it kind of jokingly, but yeah. She's so young, I'm surprised that she loves watching
TV. Yeah. It doesn't matter what's on. Yeah.
So, you can put a blank screen on there, she's like,
she's like a moth.
She's like, the television's on? Ooh, I want to watch.
To be fair, I'm like that if I'm in a restaurant. If there's a TV, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I'm listening, but my eyes are going to be on the glowing object.
It's very distracting.
She honestly, she did take away some stuff from it, though. She was saying she seemed nice, and she seemed to know what she was talking about, and she wanted to help people. She wanted to give people, you know, like health insurance, whatever it was. I can't remember. School, health insurance. Elizabeth wants to give people a lot of things.
All of those things.
She really liked that she said, "Stop laughing. It isn't funny."
There's a funny moment in one of the debates where Elizabeth Warren tried to bring up some personal anecdote, like, "Oh, I know this person, you know." That happens all the time in debates. You always want to bring up, name drop somebody, and like, "Oh, he's struggling to make his diabetes payments or buy his diabetes medication." And the moderators kind of cut her off and be like, "No, please answer the question." And so she answered the question, and then there's some more talking, and then they came back to Elizabeth Warren with another question, and she said, she answered the question like yes or no, very briefly, and said, "I want to go back to what I was talking about before," about, and she name dropped the person again, and the crowd starts laughing, and she very sternly says, "This is not funny," to the audience, which is kind of bold, and it was, I thought it was funny because
Talia
loved
it.
Yeah, and Talia loved it.
She's like, "I like that I think she liked that she took charge and was like, this is serious, it's not funny, stop laughing."
And the audience immediately shut up because they're like, "Oh, crap."
Unlike in the last debate where they started booing Bernie for some of the things he was saying.
So yeah.
When Warren says quiet down, they act like quiet down.
Yeah. I mean, I think the audience was actually kind of chagrined, like, "Oh my goodness." Like,
although that speaks
to... professor.
Yeah.
That speaks a little bit to, like, that is like a presidential... Yeah. Thing you want, quality. Right? That you can command the room like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She was in charge.
Yeah. Not anymore.
No, not this cycle. And she's probably not going to get a chance to run again because she was pretty, she's pretty elderly as well.
Surprisingly. People. Like, she doesn't look as old as Bernie and Biden and Trump, but she's actually, like, what, in her 70s, right?
Yeah, she's in her late 70s. She's, I think, a year older than Bernie, or maybe a year younger. Yeah. We're right next to each other.
Right, what kind of tales of abuse?
One more interesting story that I'll share with you because I don't want to take up too much time.
Okay.
But my precinct is in a church.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the voters are coming in.
Wait, your precinct is in
the
church?
Yes. The church is the place where people vote. So most precincts are in schools because the schools are public lands and they can, you know, say, "Hey, we're going to use this." But they don't have enough schools in the area to use for all the precincts they need to have. And other public buildings or private buildings that are available at the right time can be made available. So libraries can be... We used to have a precinct nearby that was in the Elks Lodge that the voters hated because the Elks were always there during election day eating and drinking and smoking and watching TV. And they, like, we don't want to go into a smoky bar, essentially, to vote.
And to be clear, by Elks, you're talking about people who refer to themselves as Elks, not actually the animal.
Yes.
Okay. Because I was terrified.
Are you familiar with fraternal orders and their history in the United States? Because that could be another podcast.
Elks and moose.
Are they like the stonemasons? Or
like Freemasons.
Whatever.
Freemasons.
Yes, the stonemasons from the South Simpsons. Same kind of thing. Yeah, no. Yes. Yeah, so they're fraternal orders. They get their... Or the veterans of foreign wars. Very similar.
Oh, well, and I'm not going to divert. I just want a yes or no answer from Andrew. If you know fraternal orders, I was driving by and I saw a sign that said International Order of Odd Fellows or something like that. Have you heard of that
I've heard of that one, yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to know if that was a real thing or if it was like a fake sign.
No, that one's real. They're pretty small, but they're real.
I would hope so if they're odd.
All right, back to people vote at your church because you don't have enough schools, which sounds like another problem in your
and,
area.
And the folks scared everyone away.
The point is, we have our precinct, and voters are coming in. Precinct opens up at 6 a.m. That's when people can start voting. And we have a small line at 6 a.m. because we have very strong turnout this primary election, which was fantastic. We get through the first wave, and people are still moving in, and I hear barking from outside. There's a very loud bark, and it's not like bark, 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 away. The barking is nonstop. So I go out and I have a look around what's happening, and there's a dog at the top of the hill right next to the church's property barking at the voters as they're coming into my precinct. And the voters are all looking up at the dog at the top of the hill and looking a little askance, like, what's going on here? Why is this dog barking at me?
Was it behind the fence or just standing there?
Loose dog, okay, with a collar, no owner, no leash, no chain, not tied down, just completely.
Not like, but not like in a yard where there might be an invisible fence or something. Okay.
Nope. And in fact, I was like, okay, this dog is a problem now because he's barking at voters.
It's voter intimidation.
It's voter intimidation.
I was going to say, this is like a small diversion would be, this is only Democratic primary precinct?
Democratic primary, so, like, only.
Isn't Republican... Republican primaries going on the same time at different locations or something?
No, because no in Virginia there was no Republican primary.
So that's,
it was canceled, which is an interesting story too. But
okay, that's a small diversion. So yes, I was going to make the same joke Paul just made. That was a Republican joke.
And that was... You guys are not the only ones making this joke. The voters are making this joke to me. So like, okay, this is a problem. It's 6:30. Do you know when animal control opens?
No.
11 a.m.
Oh, God.
Clearly have no animal problems right when the sun is going coming up, you know?
So I had to call the non-emergency police line and get a police officer out there. And until the police officer shows up, the dog is barking at my voters coming in and coming down the hill and chasing me periodically. You know, I turn my back to him to talk to a voter for a second. He comes down and he starts biting at my leg. I'm like, okay. This is get out of here. Shoo the dog away. And he listens to authority. He gets out of the way. He gets back up to his hill and keeps barking at the voters.
You need Elizabeth Warren there to be like,
yes, heal. I needed Elizabeth Warren. The cop car rolls up. Dog sees the cop car
runs
and books it.
Yeah.
I was like,
he didn't want to get shot.
Heck?
He's seen some of those Twitter videos where the cops show up.
This is completely unbelievable to me that a dog would be, obviously dogs are very intelligent animals, all things considered. This was apparently a German Shepherd. I don't know dog breeds, but apparently it was a German Shepherd. And the German Shepherds are smart breeds. And he recognized, oh, this is an authority figure.
The fuzz is here.
The blue car, I'm getting out of here. Yeah. He doesn't come back. Yeah. So the police officer is like, I heard something about a loose dog. I don't see anything. He's like, no, he was here. He was right there. Here, I got a photo. I got video evidence of it. Mm-hmm.
Cop climbs your car.
The,
he ran.
Yeah. Cop climbs the hill, doesn't see it. Like, okay, I'm going to have to go around and talk to the property owner and see if I can find out who this dog belongs to and make sure this doesn't happen anymore. Cool. I don't have any more problems with the dog for the rest of the election. That alone would be an interesting story. I do not know who the owner of this dog is. And I'm going to say that very clearly because the next statement I'm going to make, if I don't make that statement, may be potentially libelous.
The dog was found dead?
The dog was on the property of a person that is very well known in my community because he's a politician. That property is owned by the former chair of my county's board of supervisors, a Republican, who is extremely unpopular.
Wow. So you're saying, you're accusing on air the politician of a voter intimidation.
That is why I'm saying I don't know that it was his dog, but it was on his property.
Mm. You can read between the lines, dear listeners. All right, do you have anything else you want? On that note, that seems like a perfect note to end on. Your libelous comments.
Potentially libelous.
We'll see
if Andrew's on the next episode.
Yeah, this is your last episode of the Rampant Discourse podcast. Anything else before we end this? All right, so leave us a review on iTunes. You can. We have a Discord channel at discord.io/rampantdiscourse. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, I got it right.
Well, I don't know why you're looking at me.
Because you get it right more often than I do. Check us out on rampantdiscourse.com. Check us out on Twitter, at rampantdisc. Anything else I'm missing? We've got a Facebook page, all sorts of great places to keep the discourse going. All right.
Come tell me I was libelous.
Yeah. Tell Andrew how libelous he was.
His address is...
Here's his phone number. All right. Can't stop the discourse.